How's it going, everybody? Wednesday morning, NHL Fantasy on Ice. Pete Jensen and Rob Reese here with you, talking fantasy and sports betting ahead of the Wednesday slate and in the midst of the fantasy playoffs. Few guys better to bring on here than Chris Wassel at Chris Wassel DFS, DFS guru, fantasy hockey mastermind. What's up, Chris? How you been, man?
Not too bad. See, it's getting to the playoffs that was the problem. As people may or may not know, I think this is probably the one year that I had the most divergent results in fantasy leagues that you could ever ask for. For perspective, and of course, there's probably one league I'm not going to be allowed back in after this week because I'm beating the undefeated number one elite guy badly. But I started one league out 0-6-1. And managed to make the playoffs. Now, nice. this wasn't one of those things where you were like, oh, out of 12 teams, you were like second or third in points. And you're like, oh, you just had some really cataclysmically bad luck. Oh, no, my team was bad. I mean, between COVID injuries and everything else, one point I had to drop at least three players that were on Yahoo's top 50 list. I didn't have a choice. It's just that much in the way of COVID infections, injuries, happenstance, and bad scheduling or bad drafting, one or the other, but managed to literally right the ship. And I had leagues where literally I had this great team on paper, probably a top team, even Yahoo graded one of my drafts as an A, and
Well, let's talk about your playoff strategy here, Chris. I got a good question yesterday. It's a little bit more general, but the question was essentially this. Would you take a team with a good schedule? Let's say use the Dallas-Detroit example where Dallas plays Detroit four times this week. They've already beaten them twice. Maybe a fringe player on a team like Dallas to get the good schedule, or would you prioritize, you know, a top 75 player overall on a team that might only be playing two or three times? Where do you lean with your personal strategy?
I'm like the bad meanie when it comes to this. I'm riding the heat at this point with the compressed schedules and the mini series and the various delays that are going on. If I've got a player that's hot as opposed to a player that's only playing a couple times a week, or even in this case this week where you have Colorado coming off, well, we hope they're playing tomorrow. Let's put it that way. After delay, they may or may not be rusty. I'm always going with the guy that's on a heater. If a certain Dallas winger that is absolutely on fire right now, that may be challenging Kaprizov for the Calder Trophy, is on my radar and I picked him up a few weeks ago. Yeah, I'm going to keep riding him until he, for lack of a better term, until the wheels come off.
Yeah, can't blame you for rostering and hanging on to Jason Robertson at this point. The guy's been incredible. And even yesterday, second of a back-to-back, Dallas keeps rolling without Haskinen, who is day-to-day right now. Hopefully he comes back soon. And then Hintz also missed the game, and that didn't matter either. That's the other good thing about Robertson and how he's been carrying that team, is that even when Hintz misses the games, more often than not, he still puts up the points, J-Rob. So major props to him. Another team that I think, when you're speaking about heaters, the Florida Panthers and some of the value that they're offering at every position. We've talked about it at length the previous shows, but what are your thoughts on some of these guys? Like Sam Bennett has been a grand slam so far for anybody who picked him up after the trade. You know, even some of these other guys like Duclair, Montour, Spencer Knight too. What were your thoughts on Spencer Knight's NHL debut yesterday?
I mean, look, With the way Florida is set up right now, with a couple, you know, obviously the couple of the injuries, the most significant still being the Ekblad injury, Florida will still face 30 to 35 shots, even if you put five cardboard cutouts out there. It just, I don't know how it happens, but somehow I looked at the end of the night and Spencer Knight faced 34 shots. He stopped 33. Wow. Okay. How'd that happen? From a team, basically Columbus said, no Domi, no Jones, no this, no that. This guy was shut down. It wasn't as if Columbus had a lack of chances, but Spencer Knight saw the puck well. He saw what was in front of him. He stopped basically everything he was asked to, except for a goal in the first period. But hey, you know, that's okay. It was more than an shoot, it was more than adequate. It was a very nice, tidy performance for him in a game that Florida figured, hey, we can sprinkle him in and, you know, he's going to face an easy shot load. And it's Florida. It never is an easy shot load when they play Columbus. It's almost guaranteed that you see the both teams combine for 70 shots. It's like Florida and Detroit last year. It was the same thing. It didn't matter if Florida was coming in on a six-game heater and Detroit was losing 15 out of 18. It did not matter. Those two teams always combined for 70 shots. It's just a weird confluence of hockey.
When with Florida too, Chris, now you can stream guys like Frank Vatrano, who's on a three-game point streak. If you missed out on Sam Bennett, that's too bad. He is a major difference maker. In fact, I think him and Mantha are going to be the guys that win your championship for you this year. So hopefully you got one of, if not both of those guys. But I think that's the thing we're seeing with Florida now too on the back end, not only the forward group, but guys like Brandon Montour. He's got some good numbers since he's joined Florida. Forsling is still kicking around. I know his ice time has been down. Uyghur is -4 now in the past couple games, but his ice time is still high. So if you want the forward exposure, you have three or four guys now, even without Ekblad on the back end to choose from.
Yeah, it's a pretty nice luxury. Look, Florida's middle six is probably one of the most loaded, if not the most loaded in the league when it's healthy. Especially now with Bennett. Look, Anthony Duclair, DFS-wise, has been stuck at 3,700 since the Stone Age. So, and there's quite a few players now for some reason in the shortened season that have been stuck at a certain price range that I can sit there and actively hammer on an almost nightly basis, and they will produce. And there's a few of them we'll get into probably later at some point as the Wednesday night picks come in. But bottom line here is Florida has an excellent middle six, one of the best in the league, great for fantasy. Good to sneak them in, because in a lot of places in your fantasy playoffs, you will have chances to add these guys. People, you don't want to say people are making mistakes in their leagues, but at this point, it's inevitable.
So, Chris, with Spencer Knight, I mean, he's only 7% rostered right now. We're getting down to the wire here in the fantasy playoffs. For such a quality team that's near the top of the NHL standings in Florida that we've been praising here on this show so far, like, are you confident enough in a deeper league, especially keeper or dynasty, to pick this player up, stash him even if he doesn't play the rest of the way? But do you think like he's going to make more of a fantasy impact the rest of this season, or are we going to have to wait for next season because it's a three-headed goalie monster in Florida?
With the three goalies, you have to think that he's going to get another start, maybe two. Is that worth it in your league? Now, the thing is, when does he get those starts? Because inevitably, you're in a win now situation. So if you're absolutely feeling like, hey, I could be in trouble if I don't get that vital start, then you probably shouldn't stash him. You probably should wait till next year. If your team is built and stacked and you don't need that third goalie or even fourth goalie in some of the deeper leagues out there that roster three max, then you can take the risk. But it's a 90-10 type of deal where I sit there and I go, you know what? Next year, he's going to be in a much better position. Driedger probably will be somewhere else. I believe he is a UFA at the end of the season. So look, I think Knight eventually doesn't necessarily take the starter's job at some point next year, but he's going to play a lot. So he's one to watch. He looked much more fluid than he did arguably in the World Juniors. So there's that. And look, I like the way he plays laterally. That was key last night. There was a dramatic difference in his lateral movement from last night compared to even a year ago.
I think it's going to come down to their schedule for Knight. I kind of agree with Chris. I might lean elsewhere if you need a volume guy in your head-to-head weekly league. I like him a lot for roto leagues because you're going to get the quality start. I mean, he's going to be probably a 9-20 minimum guy depending on the matchup. Now, they do play Carolina twice, you know, towards the end of the week, so I think that's where you probably say fade. I would actually turn to Braden Holtby if you need a goalie pickup right now. Won both against Toronto, good, pretty good performance for him, but they've got four games. Their next four games are against the Ottawa Senators. So I think you want to head towards a guy like that that you know is probably going to be in net for every single one of those starts. So I think I would add Braden Holtby right now, and he might be the difference for you late this week and even early in the next week.
Yeah, and Chris, right, like Canucks are, what, 8 points out of a playoff spot with four games in hand? So if those four games are against the Senators, are we talking about something brewing here for the Canucks? We mentioned it on the previous show, potentially rallying around what happened. But I think this team, we saw a big performance from Tanner Pearson yesterday. We've seen Nils Höglander really heating up. That's a guy that if you want to tap into the Canucks top six, whether or not Pettersson comes back from injury at any point, I think Höglander is a sneaky rookie for the stretch run of the fantasy season, right?
Yeah, Höglander is a fun little player. Hit a little bit of a wall before, obviously, the COVID outbreak. But you could see little parts of his game. You could see the acceleration in particular that he has, which, I mean, while it's not Connor McDavid-esque, no one's is, frankly. There is a noticeable first few strides that he has that most players in this league do not have. And that will bode very fortuitously in the coming years for him, especially fantasy wise. Now, we get back to those games in hand thing. Ottawa is a pesky freaking team to play against. I mean, there's no doing a little side work on the Montreal beat and learning how traumatized Montreal fans have become at playing Ottawa. I'm not counting out Ottawa at any point during these four games, only for this reason. For as many goals as they will give on occasion, there is this inherent problem of, will Vancouver run into that COVID wall? I mean, we saw it with the Devils after a couple games. We saw it with Buffalo after a game or two. We saw it even with Dallas kind of after the delay where they ran into this funk. Vancouver is a absolute wasteland when it comes to playing defense. I mean, they give up more unblocked shot attempts than I can imagine. Basically see Ottawa early portion of season compared to now, which is actually quite a bit different. And it's part of why, yeah, they have all those games in hand, but I cannot see Montreal collapsing that badly, even though they're playing poorly right now.
Well, it seems like Carey Price is out, right? Carey Price is out for at least a week. So yeah. That maybe could derail him. Sorry to interrupt, Rob.
It's a great point about Price because we've said that the past, I think, 2.5 weeks now, this Price concern, and now he's got a concussion, which is never good. And then I think it's the Vancouver, though. I really do believe that they can get through those four games against Ottawa. You're right. They are a pesky team, Chris, but Josh Norris is playing lights out. Connor Brown still scoring if you need streamers from the Senators. I just think it's Travis Green, the system that he can create there, even with a shaky defense. And then Braden Holtby, who has the track record in the playoffs in crunch situations where he usually elevates his game. So I would risk it for the biscuit here in fantasy with the Canucks. I would definitely go down on that hill for that team. And I think there is a little bit shades of like the New York Rangers where one game, you know, they win, you get high on them, and then they lose the next one, you know, in decisive fashion. So you don't want to get too high. I wouldn't go and get three guys like Höglander, Pearson, and Holtby. I'd probably choose two max, just knowing that much. But I do think they'll take these four games and put that pressure on Montreal, who's 3-7-0 in their past 10.
And they haven't lost to Ottawa this season. They're 5-0, yep. Vancouver. Early in the season, remember, they took advantage of that like three-game sweep or whatever it was. And I believe, Chris, hopefully we get a sledge from you because I know you're great at the sports betting. And unfortunately for you, your only sledge pick on this show was, I believe, picking the Senators to beat the Canucks. And you were saying Demko at the time was going to fall off, but he eked that one out in overtime or shootout, yeah, if I remember. But I think we're going to get another sledge from you for one of the games this week, maybe even the Wednesday slate, right?
Yeah, who knew that Ottawa's like three goaltenders would go down all at the same time and one in game, mind you. I was good until that happened. I mean, it was 2-2. Yep. It all looked shiny. Look, it's much like James, you know, 2-0 lead, third period, and then three goals going. Yeah, you know, it's Nick had the same thing. It seems like a theme suddenly with some of the hammers lately. They blow multiple gold leads. So I'll have to be careful there.
And then one matchup I do want to highlight tonight is the Minnesota Wild they're playing, Chris. They've got the Coyotes. Minnesota Wild's obviously favored on the road, but on transaction trends right now on Yahoo, Nick Bonino is the most added player for a stream tonight. Now, he's on a four-game point streak, multi-point games over the span, but their next three games, they've got Arizona tonight, LA, and then San Jose. So you can pick this guy up, get three favorable matchups. Are you buying in maybe for three wins here for the Wild?
I could buy in for two. Absolutely. Look, Bonino's on the first unit power play, which suddenly, I can't even say suddenly anymore, because Minnesota's power play is 43% over the last 10 games. So this isn't like some little 4 or 5 game trend. This is, 10 games is basically now, 15% is a little bit more than 15% of the season. So yikes. I mean, that's a good trend. And you have to think that's going to continue against an Arizona team that, look, they block a lot of shots. They get some shots on net, but unfortunately with Darcy Comfort not quite fully healthy, or that's the argument anyway, they're going to give up some goals. And then, LA is going to give up some goals. And, San Jose is a beacon for wingers. They give up the most DFS points to wingers and the most streamer points, mind you, fantasy-wise, to wingers. So, yeah, I could buy it.
Yeah, and like for the Wednesday slate, Alex Tuck is a must-roster DFS play against those Sharks. You mentioned how much they give up to the wings, whether it's Pacioretty or Tuck or anybody else on Vegas. Vegas is still not lost to the Sharks yet this year. And Tuck is elevated to the second line because Riley Smith is banged up. We'll see if Smith comes back, but that increased lineup placement, definitely good news for Tuck, who is a top 100 overall fantasy player in season-long leagues that count hits this year, despite playing on the third line, which is very difficult to do. Right, Chris? So, yeah, the Vegas second line, a little stale to me, but I really like Alex Tuck for this game.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, look, Alex Tuck might win the David Clarkson Award this year for potting a bunch of goals and hitting a bunch of people. All joking aside, Tuck probably is a second line player. He just sometimes has the inconsistencies of what you would call a middle six. He's the quintessential middle six guy. You can plug them, you can move them, you can utilize them almost anywhere. And the best part is he can settle back in when you absolutely need him, like tonight against San Jose.
What about the Montreal Canadiens? I know we talked about them earlier, Chris, just highlighted them, but I think they've got more concerns just then Price being out of the lineup. And Edmonton's probably not a team you want to go against if you've got concerns in net, if you've got a couple concerns on the back end. But how about forward-wise for fantasy? It seems like we're getting a little bit stale here with Nick Suzuki, who's dried up. Toffoli had a couple goals over the weekend, I think on Friday, so he's okay. I think he's going to come back in for a better finish here. But I'm not seeing a whole lot of good streaming options from their forward group right now.
Yeah, this is the simple way to sum up Montreal's forwards right now. See my thumb? Ow. The night that happened to Brendan Gallagher when he broke his thumb was the night Montreal season changed.
Yeah.
Look, the way Gallagher plays, it's not just his net front presence. It's obviously he's a surprisingly agile puck mover in the neutral zone. And I think most forgot this in Montreal, and most people throughout the league forgot just how much sometimes one player louses up your entire lineup. And unfortunately for Montreal, the loss of Gallagher hurts in a profound way that affects everything. I mean, it's snowballed, whether fairly or unfairly. Jeff Petrie has like 3 points in like the last 20, what feels like 20 games. It's not 20, but it feels like it, because it's been that long of a bad stretch for a lot of these players, and they cannot score. Their power play has been, it's been bupkis for most of the last, what feels like a decade, but this season, particularly when you need a power play goal, Brendan Gallagher can sometimes get that for you. When you need an even strength goal late in the third period, Brendan Gallagher usually has some kind of role in getting that for you. He's not there. He's not that rock. Now players are being forced into positions that they're not comfortable with in a year with a compressed schedule. And that's a lot of why they're 3-7 in their last 10. It's not just the goaltending, but it's affected everything else. Now it's affected their defense. Jeff Petrie, who was probably a Norris candidate about a month ago or very close to it. I watched it last night in stunned belief. I mean, granted, it's Connor McDavid, but I watched Petrie play a wrong angle 3 times in a row, and it led to 3 Edmonton goals in the span of about 7.5 minutes. So look, can they right the ship with their coaching staff right now and their personnel? It's an iffy proposition. They do have a cushion though. That maybe just that it's very dicey going down the stretch.
Well, you mentioned how they've fallen off since Gallagher's injury. I think you could say the opposite about the Canucks. They've actually played really well the past like month and a half, other than the time that they missed because of COVID without Pettersson. So give them credit for that. They're actually playing somehow better without their best player, and maybe that can help them close the gap. As far as Montreal, to me, I mean, what a shame, right? You go out and get Eric Staal on the veteran contract, you sign Corey Perry in the offseason, and now you can't make room for the perfect in-house replacement for Brendan Gallagher, not in terms of size and gameplay, but in terms of scoring pop and making up for one of your best offensive players in the lineup. They can't make room for Cole Caulfield. Do you think that they will at some point? Do you think they'll waive somebody or make some sort of a move and burn this first year? Just because I feel like Montreal has built a win now team, but they're just not very good. So maybe trying to make a move like that could be a little desperate, but could pay off for them if it works out.
I mean, look, this is Montreal, who is starving for a deep playoff run like the deserts miss the rain. I mean, there is no other way to put this. They are built to win right now. They have the players, they have the talent, they have the 5-on-5 ability. Obviously, Cole Caulfield could add to the power play in ways that we can't even fathom on this show. And it'd take approximately, it was $1.3 million in salary, give or take, for them to maneuver around between now and they would have to probably waive somebody or put somebody on waivers. They could LTIR Carey Price if they really had to. I wouldn't do it. I don't think it's warranted. I don't think the concussion is that bad. I think they're honestly giving him a rest to be smart at this point. Not sure if it actually, you know, is a, you never know. You never know what concussions. But nonetheless, it's good right now that we're talking about this only because we had an article on Cole Caulfield on full Hockey Press coverage just the other day and basically brought up this point. Would it be the perfect time to bring up Caulfield? And it actually is. They need a guy who can hit the net from almost anywhere. And they do not really have that. They have guys that can get shots on net, but it usually hits the goalie right in the chest. Caulfield is not one of those guys. There's enough big players that you could shelter next to him that he won't get clocked, because he does have a tendency to get knocked around a little bit because he admires things that he does a little bit too much. But he's gotten better about that. And at the NHL level, he has what you call that pace. And that's something that no Montreal forward has right now.
Well, I think we can all agree on this show that if he gets in the lineup, it's a must add in fantasy. It's a must roster in DFS. It's a total game changer for the Canadians at this point in the season. I just hope that it does happen, Chris. I do want to shift gears here and talk a little bit about the Nashville Predators. Petey and I were talking about Matt Duchene yesterday, who came back in the lineup. Looks to be, you know, maybe coming into the Matt Duchene of old if he can keep this little scoring pace up. So it'll be interesting to see, because they've got 2 more games against the Blackhawks this week. Would you stream anybody from Nashville for those games, including Matt Duchene?
I would consider it at this point. Look, Chicago get, again, is another one of those teams. Bottom 5 in unblocked shot attempts. Bottom 5 in shots allowed. Bottom 5 in road goals per game allowed. Penalty kill is about 27th or 28th given the night. I would consider streaming Duchesne, but I would look at one other option that may return tonight, and that would be none other than Eli Tolvanen, who could return tonight. He did practice yesterday in the nice shiny the contact jersey, not the non-contact one, the contact one. That's important to note. So, is my Philip Forsberg ever coming back though? I don't think so. That does make me a little bit sad. But the fact that Tolvanen, who look, had 6 power play points in his 10 games before he got injured, is the perfect add tonight if he plays. So if he doesn't, then yeah, I'm absolutely dreaming Duchesne just for the power play points, because I'm expecting them tonight.
Well, Nashville has absolutely dominated the Blackhawks this season. And you look back to their past like 19, 20 games, they're 14-5-0 in their past 19. That is tied for the NHL lead in wins. So, you know, for someone like me that was down on Nashville early in the season, they're making me eat my words and they're keeping it up and they're beating up on a fellow team that is competing for that fourth spot. So, if they get it, they will have earned it because they've dominated a team that's in their path to get it, right?
Yeah, this is what it's going to be about, with particularly the, the West, with the bubble there, and then with Nashville, Nashville, Dallas, Chicago. It's the same thing. Nashville has been able to beat the teams that they need to beat, whereas Chicago imploded the other night. Right before our eyes, they had this one moment where it looked like, okay, the Kane line had a nice goal and you thought, oh, well, maybe that's it. And then Nashville just kept right on going. And it was like, they didn't miss a beat. And when you have this dominance of winning 14 out of the past 19 matchups, and you're able to exploit a team like Chicago, who in those 19 games has a penalty kill under 70%, by the way, it's something that you absolutely have to exploit tonight often.
I would say I would take Nashville even at -130. I think that's a pretty safe one. You could maybe even parlay it with something else. But going back to Chicago, I think that's an interesting team to look at in keeper leagues, because obviously Pat Kane is getting up there. He's going to be a true, true veteran in this league now. But they also have really intriguing guys like Kirby Dach and Adam Boqvist in keeper leagues. Even Kevin Lankinen has now entered that conversation too. So I'm going to be interested to see how they do finish this season out, because they started pretty well. They were in it for a while. Now I don't think they have the horses to get over the finish line, but I think there is going to be some trends here to watch for them heading into next season, at least in a fantasy lens.
Right. They're running out of gas. They really are. And it's fortunate, because you saw the beginning of the season and then you saw Dach get injured. He came back. He looked a bit, he looked promising. He still, let's face it, he still does. Had the game the other night against Nashville where he looked a little bit lost at times, but it's going to happen at this point. There's just going to be a game or two here and there where he's a young guy. It's a tough league, but it really is a grind, especially this year with the compressed schedule. And, he's trying to basically get his bearings. He had a couple nice chances too. The one he just flubbed, and you even just see the look on his face where he just puts his hands over his eyes like, ah, I can't believe I missed that. So don't worry about too much what happens. He's going to finish just fine. He was put back on the top offensive line with Kane and DeBrincat on Monday, and you expect good things from him going. Now, Boqvist is interesting. Boqvist is a bit of a wild card. I'm more interested to see what happens with him next year and how Chicago slots him in. Obviously, this year is a little bit herky-jerky for him. Let's be honest. It's been up and down and all over the place. And that's expected with young players, but particularly a guy like Boqvist, I'm expecting bigger things from him next season.
And at the defense position, one guy I wanted to ask you about, I think we've covered at length pretty much every trade out there, but one really sneaky one other than Sam Bennett is Mike Riley on defense for the Boston Bruins. I was really curious. Me and Robbie were talking about him yesterday. Should we keep him in the top 50 D? I was like, I really want to see what kind of a role he has when Grizzlick is back, not only Charlie McAvoy. Well, Grizzlick came back. Riley played 21 plus minutes, had an assist. He's quietly top 20 among all defensemen, tied for 18th among all defensemen in the NHL this season in assists. So, I mean, that's the real deal. He was working it for Ottawa even before he came to the Bruins, but that was a stealth little trade by them. And I think Mike Riley is worth rostering in fantasy the next couple of weeks.
Yeah, he'll clock in 20 plus for the rest of the season based on the rest of Boston's defensive situation. And it's a nice luck. It's a perfect fit for him. Obviously, look, Riley has one of the, I would say, one of the best pairs of eyes that I've seen this year as far as defensemen in the league. His on-ice vision must be 2015 or something that I could dream of out of both eyes, because that's just not going to ever happen. Now, the key with him, obviously, is he's going to get some power play time. We don't know how much going forward. We just know that Charlie McAvoy is going to get orphaned off into second unit power play land until the end of time, no matter what he does. So it's great for Riley owners. Absolutely. And you got to think that if he keeps playing like that, he might usurp Grilchick a little bit for that top unit role. At the very least, he's an excellent power play quarterback, and it's something that Boston will definitely explore if there's any other injury issues to come.
I think they need to. I mean, especially after Krug left, it just seems like they can't get that spot ironed out, and that's something they're going to need to figure out going into the postseason, especially in that East Division where there's some pretty good power plays at the top of the standings there. So I would say Mike Riley, Pete, I think he's a guy that you can stream comfortably. He's not going to hurt you in any way. The plus minus is going to be there. The assists are obviously going to be there. I am a little bit concerned now with McAvoy. He's so hot and cold, and we've seen this in fantasy throughout his career. He'll have five games where he looks like a Norris Trophy finalist and the production matches it, but then we see another five games where he'll barely have an assist, or, you know, he'll be like a minus two, and we're like, what, how is that possible with when you have 25 minutes of even strength exposure to some of the three best fantasy players in the entire game? So that's one storyline I definitely want to watch down the stretch. And with Grizzlick, I think that's a player where he's going to lose value here unless he's playing big time minutes on the power play, but even he drops off in terms of hot and cold as well.
The one thing I really like about Boston now that they're a two-line team, though, is that, like, even if he's the third on the pecking order behind Grizzlick and McAvoy, like, he's going to get great even strength exposure. Even if he plays 4 minutes a game fewer than a McAvoy, speaking of Riley. So that's something that I really like. Like, as Boston has, you know, bolstered its secondary scoring to a point where it's better than it has been in recent years, past 3-4 years, I would say, with the second line of Hall, Krejci, and Craig Smith, like, that benefits and extends, like, the fantasy relevance of that defense. They could be a team the rest of the way that has three fantasy relevant defensemen. And of course, they're one of the safest fantasy teams in general over the past 5-10 years in the NHL. So that, I think the moves at the deadline, not only Riley, but also Hall, just boost the overall outlook. And, you know, Riley joined the top 200 last week, and I think he's sticking in there this week. So it's a good trend for fantasy to be able to tap into a team like that.
Well, and Chris, the Bruins are only 4 points behind the Islanders and the Caps for first place in the division, and they've got two games in hand. So all of a sudden you win four in a row and you're right there competing for first. Who do you think takes the throne in the East?
I'm going with my crazy pick because I saw them last week at plus 500 to win the division. And I sat there and couldn't believe this. Boston may just pull this off. They have the chance to pull this off. Look, the Islanders have been up and down. You never quite know how they're going to play against the Rangers. They should be able to hold them off. Washington is very vulnerable defensively, and Boston has shown historically that they play some wacky games with them. I mean, we saw it last week against them where it was just like, huh? But this is a Bruins team now that has that, I don't think in 6 years of Don Sweeney's tenure, that maybe he's finally found the winger, second line winger of his dreams. I mean, there is a hope here that has not been seen in Boston. And this could be enough to buoy them, especially if Tuukka Rask stays healthy. I know. It's a scary proposition. There's always somebody in Boston or multiple people that are going down to injury. But if they can stay healthy enough, they have a schedule that is favorable to pull this off.
Now, Chris, what are you expecting from Nick Foligno when he makes his debut? Because we're talking about guys coming back from injury. Like, of course, Blake Wheeler could come back on Thursday, and Tolvanen could maybe come back tonight. If not tonight, he's been improved his status to day-to-day, so probably going to come back at some point this week. But as far as Foligno, we haven't yet seen him in a Maple Leaf sweater after the trade and the quarantine. But are you expecting big things in terms of the category coverage for when he comes back? Sounds like Thursday.
Yeah, it looks like it'll be more of the same. It'll be more of the old Nick Foligno that we were used to seeing from even a couple seasons ago in Columbus. He'll be slotted into a nice, easy role in Toronto. He won't have to carry anything. He'll be able to lead by example more than having to drag guys like Max Domi around, which, you know, let's face it, that's never an easy thing to do. And look, he'll be set up for success. It won't be like Columbus for him. And there's not as much pressure for him going in as, say, other forwards, because he's been there before in these pressure, absolute must make the playoff scenario. Otherwise you're going to die. I mean, it's not that dramatic necessarily, but there is this mindset with him where he could thrive very easily. Unlike, say, what's happened on Long Island with their two trade acquisitions that have been a little bit more of a mixed bag.
And with Toronto, I mean, the Alex Galchenyuk train is losing steam here. Nick Robertson's a great prospect, but probably not going to play top 6 minutes. Only played 9 minutes last night against Vancouver. So there's definitely some plug-and-play opportunities where Foligno could all of a sudden be logging 18, 19 minutes with exposure to one of Matthews or Tavares. So definitely a must-have player for me in all leagues. Now, before we let you go, Chris, is there anybody in DFS on Wednesday that you absolutely love that I should have in my lineup?
Okay, like I said earlier in the show, because there's players that just get caught in the DFS salary pricing wormhole, somebody get Alex Goligoski above $4,000 in FanDuel, please. Somebody, anybody. I mean, I understand it's a value pick for the reason of being a value pick, but the guy has double-digit FanDuel points now in 5 of his last 6 games and 7 of his last 10. Arguably, other than Jacob Chychrun, he is Arizona's most consistent defensive player. And I would make the case based on point per dollar that he is their most consistent fantasy defenseman at this point. He's not the only one. Okay, here we go. This one's going to strike at the heart of David Satriano somewhere if he's listening. Zach Parise is the the Minnesota equivalent of Jason Spezza now. He's playing power play minutes and basically fourth line at even strength. And it probably is the perfect role for a mentor-like player in his mid-30s to play out the last days of his career. He's looked much better. He has a few goals in his last half dozen games. He has some of that speed that we used to see from Zach Parise. He's not winded anymore. And the most important thing is he's, again, below $4,000.
Right. You could find some great value out there for sure. And yeah, another stat on Goligoski, maybe not even just their most consistent defenseman lately, maybe their most consistent scorer in general, with 13 points and a plus 10 in his past 14 games. So this is, you know, going on a month that this guy has been a train, riding the Coyotes, you know, at least pushing them in the right direction. I know they've lost a ton of games, right? Like the Blues have been terrible. The Coyotes have been even worse. The Blues at least have some games in hand. And then the Sharks like got a point the other day and gained some ground. I mean, that's how bad it's gotten out in the West. You think the Blues are going to?
Yeah, the West could be you could have a team that's 2-3 games over 500 that makes the playoffs very easily or less. at this point because they're beating up each other so badly. It's funny because we're going through for Sports Betting Dime and several of the other outlets for division odds. And you look at the top records of the top teams in each division. It's like, oh, they're 6-3-1 the last 10. They're 7-2-1 the last 10. This team's won 7 straight. This week's won 4. We're starting to go through the bubble ones now. And it's like, oh, this team's 3-7. This team's 3-6-1. This team's 4-6. Or this team's on a hot streak, but they're only 5-3-2. Oh, for perspective, 5-4-1 or 5-3-2 is a hot streak for these bubble teams lately. And it's rough. I mean, I looked at the Blues at the beginning of the season, and like everybody, I thought, oh, automatic top 2-3 team in the division, easy, no problem. And then the season started and the inconsistencies began, and then the penalty kill got worse. And then Mike Hoffman couldn't score on the power play at all. There was no chemistry. Then it was like, oh, Tarasenko came back. Oh, it's going to be just fine. They're going to, and it never materialized. For a couple, 2-3 games, they look great. They look like the St. Louis we saw a couple seasons ago. And then it just falls off inevitably. It's like one step forward, two steps back. And it's the same with these other bubble teams. And even Nashville starting to fall into that a little bit. But thankfully, like we said earlier in the show, they're playing Chicago. So, you know, it's going to be a wild ride over these final last. Wait a minute. Hold on. Wait, has the schedule changed yet? Oh, okay. So still last 4 weeks.
Well, and St. Louis was supposed to play the Avs 3 times this week. They could still get 2 of those games if everything is on structure here to return tomorrow for the Avs. But they play Minnesota regardless 4 times next week. It's not going to get any easier for them. They are slipping on here. Even with games in hand, I don't love that the rest of the season, Chris, schedule-wise. But thank you for your insight here. As always, it was a pleasure having you on. And I hate that the Devils, you know, did what they did last night, losing in historic fashion. The Penguins, the only team to ever win a game having the opponent score 5 goals in the third period. First time in NHL history.
Yeah, I mean, it was like, what, 270 times that this has happened where they outscored them by 5, which is just, it's mind-boggling. I think it was 6-1. It was 6-1 in the third period. And at the time, and I said, when Pittsburgh added the 7th goal, I'm like, you know what would be really New Jersey-like this season? The Devils lose this game 7-6. And sure enough, kind of like the Ranger game on Sunday when we joked, you know, watch the Devils come back and tie and lose this in regulation and hit the Rangers puck line to boot. And everything that's gone wrong has for New Jersey, but you almost have to admire the fact that it's not that they came back. It's more you have to admonish them for getting that far behind in the first place. So, you know, if you're Pittsburgh right now, look at the video, burn before watching, and just move on. It's okay. It's what happens when you play the Devils now.
They did enough, Chris, to suck Davey back into watching the other day. He said, I'm not watching them anymore this year. And then he was watching in the third period as things were getting interesting. But Chris, before we let you go, did you have any sledgehammer pick for tonight for the betting slate in terms of the 4-game slate? Or anything just that has caught your eye for the rest of the season? Like, are you going to put a sledge maybe on like the Bruins to win the East? I know you like that pick, you said.
You know what? I will put one sledge on Boston just because of the value, because it's still about +4 something. It's coming. It's going to come down real quick when they update on tomorrow or Friday. Okay. So if you're near your Vegas or New Jersey bookie or whichever bookie you can get your hands on at this point or whichever site, you might want to hammer that in now. That's the one. The other one is, look, is Martin Jones going to stop 38-40 tonight again against Vegas? Oh, heck no. Take Vegas, hammer it down, take the big giant 10-pound doublehead sledge and just roll with it. It will be Vegas for the Ocho. That's right. The Ocho winning streak, not 7, but Ocho tonight.
I like it. And with the confidence, you could even do a little puck line on that one and feel good about it with how the Golden Knights have dominated the Sharks this year. But Chris, thanks for coming on, buddy. And great to see you as always, and keep up the great work at Chris Wassel DFS. Thanks for coming on, man.
Thank you, guys.
All right, so for Rob Reese, Pete Jensen, and Chris Wassel, we'll be back with you on Friday with a TBD guest, maybe Mike Leboff. We'll see if he can come on. But Anyway, for Chris, Robbie, Pete, we'll talk to you on Friday, NHL Fantasy on Ice. Thanks for tuning in.